You might like to turn in your Bible, if you would, to the book of Exodus, Exodus chapter 2. And as we continue our efforts to try to understand better God and his wonderful person by way of his wonderful name, by way of his wonderful working, so that we trust him more. When we trust him more, the Spirit of God is going to exercise our privileges that we have because of Christ's death, burial, and resurrection. We only have those privileges because of him. And the Spirit of God will help us to exercise and appropriate that wonderful truth, those truths better. Now, thus, as we do this little exercise, if you would just think of if you've ever been in a hospital or some other place, where in a given moment, a given time, the whole staff related to a given exercise problem, whatever it is, person, they all come together and sit at the big table, and then they have a discussion. And they seek to put together all their different inputs to come up with a better view of resolving, solving the problem. And thus, I think. So now, if you would be like that, and as you sit, you are obviously in the presence of God. So here we're sitting, and God has done something. He does things. And we're there to consider what he says and to offer any suggestions you might have for him. And he might have a suggestion for us. So, Exodus chapter 2, in the light of our study in Israel and the water, bitter water. Exodus chapter 2, verse 23. And it came to pass in the process of time that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage, and they cried, and their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage, the slavery. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's the basis for God's action. They're in trouble, Israel. But the basis of why God continues in these 400 years, etc. Why? Because God has made a commitment to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that line, Israel, is going to be the source of the Savior, Genesis 3 and 15. So you have to preserve the line. God has to do that because he made a commitment to do that. So now, God having done that, in verse 25, and God looked upon the children of Israel, and God had respect, and the word respect is to see, to know. God knew, God looked, has a visual looking at it, and he understands, he knows, or has respect. Now, here's God looking at the condition they're in. And thus, chapter 3, and in verse 7, and the Lord said to Moses, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. I know what they're going through. They're going through a very hard time, harder than usual because of another Pharaoh, more difficult than ever. Chapter 4. And if I may, in verse 31, and the people believed when they saw and heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel and that he had looked upon their affliction. Then they bowed their heads and worshiped. Now that's here's God. God's doing a work, and Moses is there and communicating, and they are told that God is doing something. And therefore the people hearken and respect and stop and have a healthier sense of God. God's doing something. And thus, over a few words, chapter 5, verse 1. And chapter 5, verse 1, and afterwards Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, "Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast unto me in the wilderness." And Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go. I don't intend to let Israel go." So here's Israel in trouble. Moses has told Israel that God is going to do something. And what do they know? Well, in God's seeking to communicate communicate through Moses to Pharaoh, and thus the people are clued in. What are they clued into? They're clued into the fact that Pharaoh is not going to let the people go. And God says that before he even sends Moses. He tells Moses, before I go, before you ever get there, I want you to know Moses intends not to let the people go. We're going to do everything, but I want you to know Pharaoh is not going to respond to Moses. So, and Pharaoh is not going to let them go. Exodus chapter 12, verse 35. Exodus 12 and 35. So, we know that Pharaoh is determined, and God tells us that before he ever commences doing anything. He makes that statement about what he's going to do. And in the process, in chapter 12, Exodus chapter 12, so here's, we know what Pharaoh's doing, and Israel knows what Pharaoh's doing. And so we're going to go now to the people. The people living, the Egyptians. Would you go with me, please, chapter 12, and in verse 35, 12 and 35, Exodus. We got what the people are doing. And Moses, we know what Pharaoh's doing. He's a negative all the way in this thing. So there's no positive going to come out of him. And so chapter 12, now what about the Egyptian people? In verse 35, and the children of Israel did according to the word of Moses, and they borrowed, that means to lend, to take, if you would, to lend the spoil. In other words, the Egyptians they've served the Egyptians for 400 years or so, and it's time for you to take the spoils of conquest. And thus, verse 35 again, the children of Israel did according to the word of Moses, and they borrowed or took from them, borrowed of the Egyptians, jewels of silver, jewels of gold, and raiment. So they took all this, and if you took time to go back, well, you can, chapter 3, verse 22, just for the sake of it. Chapter 3 and verse 22. And by the way, if you're going to go back there, then lock on to the other statement of God, making it clear, already, he already knows what Pharaoh's going to do and not do. Chapter 3, Exodus, verse 19. And I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go, no, not by a mighty hand. God already clued him in, as we mentioned. Now, down to verse 22, in the light of the people, is Pharaoh, now in the right of the people. Every woman shall borrow, take, to press, it means to press something urgently, to ask something in an urgent, pressing way. Give me this. I need this. Thus, and every woman shall borrow of her neighbor and of her that sojourneth in her house jewels of silver, jewels of gold, and raiment, and ye shall put them upon your sons and upon your daughters, and ye shall spoil the Egyptians. So they're going to walk out of there, and as they go out of Egypt, here's the people of Israel, a people of Egypt looking, And Pharaoh isn't happy. And all the people, you're walking out, his 2 million plus people going out, and they're taking all their possessions. All the stuff that they want that was valuable, gold, silver, clothes, cloaks, clothing. Thus, over in chapter 11, verse 2, and you'll notice again, speak now in the ears of the people, and let every man borrow, there's the same verb to ask, pressingly, urgently, let every man borrow of his neighbor, and every woman of her neighbor, jewels of silver and jewels of gold, all valuable things to take them. And by the way, you know what's going to happen. All those jewels that they take of gold and jewels and stuff, diamonds and all that is going to be given freely for the tabernacle. God's going to say, do we have some supplies to build this? And then all the people are going to come with the gold and the silver they took and going to put it and deposit it for the workers to produce the tabernacle of gold and silver. Thus, in Exodus chapter 11 and in verse 2, they went and they were told to take all of that. So now, over to chapter 12 and in verse 36, 12 and 36, picking up, if I may, in verse 36, and the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they lent, there's your word borrow to ask urgently, pressingly, lent unto them, such things as they required, and they stripped off, that which the Egyptians had. It would be used of raking the lawn, raking something, and you rake up everything that's on the ground. You rake it up, bring it to you, bring it together, is the word. Thus, the spoil, they spoiled the Egyptians. Now, hang on to that, and go over just for a case in point of that truth exercise. Over to 2 Chronicles and chapter 20. 2 Chronicles in chapter 20. They spoiled. Now, God gave the people of Israel a booty, a spoil, for all their years of labor, as it were. Now, in 2 Chronicles chapter 20, and if I may, in chapter 20 and in verse 25. 20 and 25. Now, before I read that, though, you want to know the wonderful events of what happened and why it happened. A, Israel has spent 400 years in a fiery furnace to get, as you'll see in a minute, for a wonderful benefit. Now, God, when we look to you and allow you to work, we're going to trust you. Now, Israel is trusting God, not very well, but they're trusting God. And they're taking from the Egyptians, their neighbor, the people that had all the wealth, and they're going to walk out of Egypt with all of that wealth. Now, here is Jehoshaphat, and Jehoshaphat is in trouble because you have the three tribes, Ammon and Moab and Mount Seir. They're all coming after Israel and Jerusalem. They're coming after them. So now what? God, and they're trusting God, he is. How much so? Watch. Verse 15. 20 and 15, 2 Chronicles. And he said, hearken ye, all Judah, and all you inhabitants of Jerusalem, thou King Jehoshaphat, thus saith the Lord unto you, be not afraid, nor dismayed, by reason of this great multitude. Why? For the battle is not yours, but God's. God's in this thing. God's in what's happening to Israel in Exodus. Verse 17, you shall not need to fight in this battle. Set yourselves, stand ye still, and see the salvation of the Lord with you. O Judah and Jerusalem, fear not, nor be dismayed. Tomorrow go out against them. I want you to go out, but you aren't going to fight. And you're going to go smack heading right into them. They're there chariots, everything ready to get you. And you're going to walk out as if you run dress parade, and out you go, walking straight into the slaughterhouse. Or is that so? Watch. To go out against them, for the Lord shall be with you. Now that takes faith, doesn't it? Here they are there. And Joshua, you're to lead the people out, to walk, go out, to face those that enemy, and you're going to go out and face them. And wow. With nothing, you're just going to go. How are we going to go? Verse 20. And they rose early in the morning and went both unto the wilderness of Tekoa. And as they went forth, Jehoshaphat stood and said, Hear me, O Judah, and ye inhabitants of Jerusalem. Believe in the Lord your God, so shall ye be established. Believe his prophets, so shall ye prosper. You've got to believe God and his word and what he's doing and what he's after. Verse 21. And when we had consulted with the people, he appointed singers unto the Lord. What purpose? That they should praise the beauty of holiness as they went out before the army, and to say, Praise the Lord, for his mercy endureth forever. And when they began, they're marching now, God told them, head into the enemy, head at them, go at them. And when they began to sing and to praise, the Lord set ambushes against the children of Ammon and Moab and Mount Seir, which were come against Judah, and they were smitten, and they all died. They all quit. They all beat each other up. Joshua and the parade of Israelites were praising God and going forward. Now you say, well, that's a silly thing. No, not when God said it. You do what God said. You honor God. You honor his prescriptions. Thus the result. The result. Over in chapter 20 and in verse 25. And when Jehoshaphat and the people came to take away the spoil, there's your word, to take away spoil. When they came to take away spoil, they found among them in abundance both riches with the dead bodies and precious jewels, which they stripped, and that is the verb you have in Exodus chapter 12, verse 36, to strip, to spoil, to take it away. They stripped off for themselves all of these precious things, more than they could carry away, and they were 3 days in gathering up the spoil, and it was so much. They made a great big pile, and when it was time to go home, they didn't have enough means to take it. They had to leave it. Too much. Too much. God, you did that. That's right. I did that. They did what I told them to do. And I rewarded them with great treasure. Now, back over to Exodus 12. Exodus chapter 12. In the light of that, Pharaoh, and the people are not positive about the Exodus. They are not happy about the Exodus. Neither are the Israelites happy about the Exodus. Now this will help you because remember we're diagnosing what to do. So you need to know the conditions so you can make a judgment on how do we solve the problem. Pharaoh, negative. The people of Egypt, negative, understandably. And now Israel is negative. Chapter 13, Exodus chapter 13, picking up, please, in verse 15. Exodus and 13 and 15. And you'll note, please, And it came to pass, when Pharaoh would hardly let us go, that the Lord slew all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of beast. Therefore I sacrifice to the Lord all that openeth the matrix between being males, but all the firstborn of my children of Israel I redeem. And it shall be for a token upon thine hand and for frontlets between thine eyes. For by strength of hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt. Verse 17. And it came to pass, when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God led them not through the way of the land of the Philistines. Remember, that's in the northern part, up in Gaza over there. Now you hear about it. Up there from Egypt, slide right up the coast of the Mediterranean to Israel. God didn't do that. Verse 17, God led them not through the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. That's the shortest route. But God said, lest peradventure the people repent when they see war and they return to Egypt. God led the people about another way. Now, skipping down if I can, God led them another way. Verse 21. Now, God, remember, God's leading them now. So you want to know they're in the presence of God. In the presence of God, you pay attention. True. If God's doing it, you'd say, well, we never had that. People do it. When you have big phenomena going on, which they did, you pay attention. You pay attention. Watch. Verse 21. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light to go by day and night. He took not away the pillar of the cloud by day, nor the pillar of fire by night, from before the people. So God, you are giving them a visual 24 hours a day, every moving down now to cross the Red Sea. They are in your presence. The fire by night, the cloud by day. Wow. We never had this in Egypt. Nope. But God has their attention. No question. No question about it. And thus Israel should understand God's person, God's power, God's wonderful presence. And day and night, God was reminding them he was God. Chapter 14, verse 11. Now they're going. Now they haven't crossed the Red Sea. Remember now, Pharaoh is negative. The people of Egypt are negative. Chapter 14, verse 11. And they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore thou hast dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt. Is not this the word that we did tell thee where? In Egypt. All the while you get all of these plagues and wonders, and finally the death of the firstborn. And I'm listening now. God, give me a clue. What are the people of Israel saying to you? Leave us alone. Leave us alone. Get out of here, Moses. Go do your miracles somewhere else. Now, verse 12. Is not this the word that you did tell thee, that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone? Why? That we may serve the Egyptians. But you're in bondage. That's right. It's very difficult. That's right. But at least it's our bondage, and we are adjusted to handling it. We've adjusted to handling our life in the midst of it all. Now, so, for it had been, verse 12, better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. And Moses said unto the people, fear ye not. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you shall see them again no more forever. And the Lord shall fight. He will go to war. We just read it with Jehoshaphat. He will go to war for you, and ye shall hold your peace and be still. Still, I want you to be quiet, inactive. Just be quiet. I don't want to hear anything. I just want you to sit still. Be quiet. I'm going to do it. So here they are. They're murmuring, going back to Eden. God said, I want you to be quiet. So everyone calms down for a sec. And they do that. So in the process, Exodus chapter 15, remember we read, they crossed the Red Sea and Moses gives the great song, as we looked at last week, of victory. First chapter 15, verse 18, the Lord shall reign, the end of the song. The Lord shall reign forever and ever, and that's how it's left. God is a wonderful, sovereign, saving God, and we're going to trust him. And he did a wonderful thing for us to get us out of Egypt, in across the Red Sea, and the whole Egyptian army has perished. And therefore, we are looking, there's the cloud by day, the fire by night. We cross the Red Sea, we cross that 4.5 miles or whatever it is, because remember, the whole Egyptian army's out in the middle when God drowns them. So, you know, it isn't a puddle. So you're out there. And there they go, and they're out there. And God, you cross the Red Sea, you've stood and seen God eliminate the Egyptian army that entered with all their chariots and everything. They had entered, God disabled the chariots so they couldn't drive out of there fast. God disabled their chariots and then drowned them. So they couldn't run, couldn't get out of there. Now, God, what have you seen, Israel? Well, we saw the Red Sea. We saw the Red Sea open up. We saw the removal of the Egyptian army. We saw that. Now, we're looking about and out, looking out. Remember, here's the very presence of God. It's awful hard to get away from God. Awful hard. Now, so they're looking around, and they got their personal needs. Now the army's gone, the threat's gone, the Egyptians are gone, the Egyptian community can't get them. They're over in the wilderness in the Sinai Peninsula, Saudi Arabia. And they're over there. Now, so they're over there, and their wilderness is there, and they go, as you know, Exodus 15, and in verse 22, they go three days, going south, across the Red Sea, going southward, down to the Sinai Peninsula, and they take a 3 days journey. They don't have any water. And they have over 2 million people and who knows, oodles and oodles of animals, except to feed. Now, here they're going down, and they have these personal needs, as we said. And remember, they're used to the Nile Delta. They're used to water. They're used to having water. They have no water. So if you gave them everything along the way, everyone's happy because we have everything still. So we don't mind a change as long as we have everything still. Well, they don't have everything still. There's no water. The Nile Delta is there. They're on the end of the Nile River in the great plush land of the Nile Delta there in the land of Goshen. So now, over if you would, with that in mind, to Deuteronomy chapter 11, just to remind us. Because you want to get the mood, the attitude of the people. And Deuteronomy chapter 11, picking up in, remember now, they're used to the Nile Delta, they're used to having water. In Deuteronomy 11, verse 10, "But the land whither thou goest in to possess it is not as the land of Egypt." What was the land of Egypt like? "From whence ye came out of the land of Egypt, where thou sowest thy seed," you planted your leeks and watermelon and everything, "and waterest it." How did they water their garden? How did they get water? "With thy foot as a garden of herbs." So what did they do? Well, they didn't have water flowing like a brook or a river. They had to go and take, and remember that you've seen that kind of thing, where they build the channel, and then they take and slant the channel and build it, and especially if it's levelish, the level land, and then you put the paddle wheel, like a paddle boat, a steamboat, and you pedal, you put your feet on the thing, and you pedal like a bike, and you pedal, and the paddles turn, and they go into the water, and lift the water up and throw the water out, and they go around and lift the water up and throw it from the Nile over into the channels to run down into their area where they need water. How do they get water? Well, they got it by their own power. They got it by foot power. They did it. Now here we are in the wilderness, and we have no water, and we have no Nile Delta, and we don't have any paddles or thing to pump to get water. And so we're getting a little concerned now. So now, over if you would, with that in mind, they needed water. Deuteronomy chapter 4, you want to know the reason for that, Deuteronomy chapter 4. And picking up, please, in thought, verse 37. And because he loved thy fathers, therefore he chose their seed after them, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and brought thee out in his sight. That's how you got out of Egypt in the first place. Verse 37. Brought thee out in his sight. That, with his mighty power out of Egypt. So God demonstrated great power. Verse 37. To drive out the nations from before thee, with which thee greater and mightier than thou art, to bring thee in, to give thee their land for an inheritance, as it in this day. So we're going to verse 37. He brought thee out of Egypt, remember. Verse 38. Why did he bring him out of Egypt? To bring him into the land of promise with all of the benefits. Where water just flows. It just runs brooks and rivers, channels. You don't have to go around and pedal with foot power and hope there's, you can get more water if they keep pumping. No, you don't. It's God just gives it in the land that they would go into. So, having said that, over in chapter 15, Exodus, chapter 15. Now, they weren't paying attention to what God was going to do. And so, in the process, verse 23. When they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Remember, the word Marah means bitterness, bitterness. And that which is disagreeable, that which is disheartening, grieving. Verse 23, and when they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah, bitterness. Now, what was the reaction to, here's the water, they're all excited as we shared last week, here's water. And boy, everyone's going to have water. We finally found water. But then the water was you couldn't drink it. It was bitter. So, their reaction, verse 24, and the people murmured against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? And they were concerned. They were concerned because, and they were bitter because the water was bitter. Now, what would you do to get the people of Israel to go forward? If you were God, you were there and you had to make a decision. You want to get the people of Israel to see that their thinking, the way they act, is very unhealthy. They will not enjoy a healthy state of life if they don't fix their thinking. Now, how are we going to get them to fix their thinking? That's the issue. God, how are we going to get them? So here we're all there. We're saying, what is the plan? How are we going to get Israel to fix their thinking? They're thinking like the Pharaoh. They're thinking like the Egyptian people. They're thinking, and they would be comfortable with the Egyptian people who they just took all their stuff from. Now, so in the light of that, in order to get Israel to have a way of thinking that is healthy, not unhealthy for living, and Israel was under bondage to the Egyptians, to their ways, to their works, to their words. They were in bondage to Egypt. And thus they were blind. They were blind. They had to serve. They had to serve. They didn't have any choice. They had to serve. They had to serve whatever the Egyptians said. Whatever they said. If they said, get up at 2 in the morning, we're going to make brick, you get up at 2 in the morning and make brick. That's what you do. You are in bondage, slavery, and you have no power to say nothing doing. You wouldn't want to say that. You'd be in trouble. So here's the Egyptians, great pressure on them, and here they are now and out there, and they are bitter. And they aren't thinking right. They aren't understanding what God has done for them. And they don't, as creatures, they're not enjoying the Creator. They have no, and what is the purpose of enjoying the Creator? For His glory and honor. That's what He created us for. And so, Israel, are you going to be able to understand that wonderful privilege? Or are you going to keep wanting to go back to Egypt? And back to Egypt and live in Egypt as you do, in slavery and bondage. And you can talk about, oh, I have freedom and I love the Lord, but you're in bondage. And whatever the Egyptians say, that you do. That you do. And you better do it. That's because you're in bondage. Now, so God had set them free so they could honor God and go with God and trust God. And in doing so, and that, remember now, they wanted to, they didn't mind if you could just give them some wonderful little oasis and everything's fine and rosy, but God didn't do that. And as we shared previously and elsewhere, they wanted, if they could just have the product of what God was after, if we could just have all the benefits of the land of Palestine with the gold and the silver and the water and the animals and everything, if we could just have all of that nicely, that's the product. But they had to go through the process to get to the product. God has to do something. God has to do something to help them. Do you know, he's a wonderful pharmacist, God is. God has every ingredient in all of forever to make your prescriptions, to make your remedy. I once had, and I had to go to the hospital for some silly thing, and in the process, the pharmacist came up to where I was, and he said, I'm going to have to make you a special recipe. And I said, how about that? I can't have a regular one? No, I'm going to make you a special recipe. God, what do? You make a special recipe for Israel. How about this and how about that? God, no, we have a problem. Hang on here for a sec. Go, hold your finger here and go over, if you would, to Isaiah chapter 5 again. Keep reminding ourselves about it. Isaiah chapter 5, what is the problem that will more and more come to the front and be obvious? And it requires God's personal attention to get this done. God just can't walk away from the patient. Israel is in trouble. They think wrong. They're coming out wrong. They're going wrong. They go back to Egypt if he let them. Isaiah chapter 5. And in verse 20, you know, woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, turn the thing upside down, inside out, that put darkness for light and light for darkness. We did that on Sunday. And that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. They turn it upside down. Watch. Egypt is bitter. But I'm going to call God's wonderful working at Marah, bitterness. I'm going to call that bad. I'm going to call Egypt good. I'm going to reverse it. God was helping them with bitterness. That was their trouble. They were caught up. They were caught up in back there where they should have never considered. It would be like someone saying, I wish I didn't believe. I don't want to believe. Do you know what you give up when you do that? Do you know how much you give up? You would never dream of saying such a thing if you understood. Israel did not understand. And thus, they call bitter sweet and sweet bitter, back over to Exodus. So now, God, you're the pharmacist. And you can go, and in your wonderful, you give it personal attention. And here we are looking to God to, if we're going to go along with your thinking. God, what are you going to do to help the people's thinking? Well, the water. They're looking for water. They're thirsty. I'm going to do a wonderful thing for them. I'm going to make it bitter. I could make it sweet. I'm going to make the water bitter. That's one of my prescriptions. Part of my recipe. All of the wonderful ingredients that have to go together to make up the recipe for you.
for me. God's personal attention in your life with ingredients that fit you. They fit you. Oh, no! No, I don't like them. Ah. Now, why are those ingredients there? Because God is personally trying to get you to look to Him with all your heart. What God does with me is one way. God does with you another way. God deals with you with His specialty. His specialty. He makes the pharmacist, takes all the ingredients and brings them together and prepares them and serves them up so that you can exercise by taking those ingredients. I don't want to take the medicine. God said, I'll help you take the medicine. I'll help you take it, you know. But I don't want it. You may not. But if you want my will for your life, and you want all of the good that I have in mind, I've got to fix your thinking. Your thinking is wrong. You're thinking wrong. You're trying to work it out on your basis, and you're going to lose out. Don't you understand? I have a wonderful plan. I'm the creator, and you're the created. And I want you to be able to enjoy the wonderful reason I created you in the first place. Isn't that simple? That's what God wants. What about government? What about this? There's a lot of stuff going on. God, but what are you doing? You're working with us in the midst of it all. You're working with Israel in the midst of the Philistines up there, the Egyptians over here, and the Canaanites and Babylonians, and here they all are, Persians. They're all out there. But there you are working with Israel because they don't pay attention to you. So you work with the people that will sit down and allow you to be the great physician, to allow you to do a work in their heart. And God, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to go and make it so that in the outworking, oh, God, working, what to do, our time. Job. I'm just wondering, are you getting a little bit? God works. And you want to say, how come God does what he does? The first thing he did is cut him off at the pass. No water. Undrinkable. And they wanted water. They need water. Now they got to trust God. You going to trust God? You going to look for another solution back to Egypt? What's your solution? To get bitter and discontent, disagreeable? And if I could just go and have my way. Israel, if you have your way, which God is going to allow, that is why Israel is in the place it is today. Because Israel wanted its way. So if you have any question about Israel having its way, and it has cost Israel many centuries. It has cost Israel to have its way. Not just a year. Generation after generation is paying the price for having its way. I want to have my way. Oh, all right. All right, Job. Job chapter 3. Oh, in verse 20. Remember, Job now is echoing. I'm going to stay in the same context thinking with Job and watch it. Job 3 and in verse 20. Wherefore, is light given to him that is what? In misery. With the bitterness. I hope with the bitter water you'll pay attention to me. I hope the problem gets you to look up and not look down. Not look in, look up, look out. A great God who day, cloud by day, fire by night, the Egyptian Red Sea, the great Egyptian army destroyed, and here you are sitting there and bitter. Wow. Thus, Job, verse 20, wherefore is light given to him that is in misery, and life unto the bitter in soul. God, why couldn't you spare us this? Why couldn't we just get along without it?
No. No, you can't. You can't. You can't. All right? Over, if you would, chapter 7. Chapter 7. Job again. Chapter 7. And in verse 11. Therefore, said Job, I will not refrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. God, I'm going through it all. And what you've done, taking my family and my health and my wealth and everything, wow, it's very hard. Hard. It isn't an agreeable thing to me. I don't understand it. Aha, chapter 10. Chapter 10, verse 1. My soul is weary of my life. I will leave my complaint upon myself. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. God, I'm trying to work through this. Good. Good, said God. Israel, what have you got to do there in the Sinai Peninsula? You're going to have to understand. You're going to have to trust God. If you're going to get from A to B to C, it isn't going to be by thinking about going backwards. You're going to have to go forwards. How am I going to go forward when I can't see? God, you see. And I'm supposed to trust you. That's right. Chapter 23. Job 23 again. Job 23. And picking up, please. In verse 10, directly, if I may. I'll even read a little context for it. Behold, I go forward, but verse 8, but he is not there. Backward, but I cannot perceive him. On the left hand where he doth work, I don't know. But I cannot behold him. He hideth himself on the right hand, and I cannot see him. But he knoweth the way that I take. When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as one. I've got to go through the process. Why couldn't I just bypass? It doesn't work that way. We all have conditioned our life by the things we've done. How we acted in growing up, how we go to school, how we marry, how we handle our job. We're all working on that environment that we, for the most part, look using human understanding, God in it, human understanding, we created it. There are choices. We made those choices. Now, God, can you help us? Yes, he can. God said, I have a wonderful plan. I'm a great physician. And I want you to know that I want to know if you are in agreement with my outworking. I have a wonderful solution for you. You're going to have to get on the operating table, and I'm going to do a work in your heart. I'm going to go in my pharmaceutical supply, and I'm going to do a number of things for you that are going to help you learn to grow. They're going to help you. Oh, no. No, you said you want to grow. And I've got to get out of you that stupid human thinking that louses up you all the time. And I'm going to help you. Bitterness? Uh-huh. Remember Ruth? Ruth? Ruth, I said, oh, why do I have to live in Moab and have it so bad? And the reason she went back to God was because, Ruth chapter 1, bitterness. She was so bitter. And she had to, where are you going to solve the bitterness? Bitterness will eat you up. Where are you going to go? You're going to have to go to God. That's the whole purpose of the bitter water, to get to God. To get to God, you got to get a change in your system. And thus, dear friend, in verse 10, chapter 23, but he knoweth the way that I take, and when he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. I'm going to be put to the test, and God, you're right there. You're right there. I'm going to trust you. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to have to learn it. I'm going to have to do it, you know. And I have to agree with you. I'm going to have to take my medicine. And I don't have a real solution for all the things in my life.
But God, you allow them in your patience, in your long suffering, in your mercy and grace. You allow all of these things to finally get us to yourself. And it isn't anything to do with anyone else. God, it isn't to do with your family, your marriage, your country, your job, your school, your business. God is doing something wonderful in spite of all of that to get you to himself. God is seeking to make saints saintly, to enjoy God. In the process of that, God does all the rest. So you're going to say, well, what about this? No, what about you? What about me? God, am I going to take... God, you're working. You have a special ingredient for me. And he does. There's no question. My little journey through time has been very, very special. No question about it. And other people may not ever know, or ever do. God would never... They would never respond. God did what he did for me to get my heart. That's what he did. God will do something else for you. Something else for you. To get you. I don't know. But you're going to have to trust God implicitly, explicitly, every implicit way. Trust him. You understand? God help us. So, we'll have a word of prayer. A prayer.